Morning, John Sullivan. Morning. It's good. It's really good to get a chance to talk to you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity as well, and get some information out there to your listeners.
I'm surprised you have 15 minutes free.
Well, it's extremely busy. We have a lot of issues that we're dealing with here at the Department of Ag, and I tell you what, I walked in the door, I think, about the 20th of January when Governor Pritzker appointed me to this position. That was my first day on the job, and I really, it hasn't stopped since day one. It's just been issue after issue, and we're trying to deal with them as best as we can, but yes, extremely busy.
You know, I try to put myself in your shoes for a couple of moments, and let's take it, if I'm standing in John Sullivan's shoes today, and I look out and I say, look, okay, the flood waters are dropping. This is good. The barges are back moving. That means agricultural products from the state of Illinois are back on the Mississippi, while at the same time going, well, that's good, but what if the wakes cause additional damage in farmers' field and levees? And I realize so much of what you have to do is a balancing act.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we're certainly glad to see the river levels dropping. That's they're headed the right direction. And I don't want to be a Debbie Downer here, but, you know, I lived kind of born and raised over in west central Illinois, kind of between the Mississippi and the Illinois rivers, pretty much where I've resided my entire life. And kind of been watching flooding and river levels rise and fall for many, many years. And I think back to 1993, which is kind of the first big flood that I really was kind of involved with as an adult, I'll say. And, you know, a lot of those levees in 93 broke in July and even some down into August. So I just warn people that, yes, the rivers are dropping. That's a great thing, and we're very excited about that, and we hope that that continues. But I think we have to be vigilant. I mean, these levees have had water up against them for many, many, many days, weeks, months, and, you know, they're saturated. And so let's don't let our guard down. Let's keep an eye on it. You just gave a weather forecast there that still has rain in it. So we just need to be aware of that and just stay vigilant.
And we, you know, a woman who lost her life driving through floodwaters on Sunday evening here in Union County in southern Illinois.
When
we look at the numbers at Chester, because that gives us a better gauge for downstate, they typed out at 46.43. We're at 43.4 as of 7 a.m. this morning. And here's the interesting thing. When I talk to farmers who are, and people are caring for the levees along the Mississippi River in Jackson County and points north in Union County, they say, look, we've got to see the river drop 8, 10, 12 feet maybe before we can open the gates to let the water off our property. And while they're doing that, the people upstream are already doing it, exacerbating the decision-making process downstate. It's a slow-motion disaster.
Yeah, and so I think you just reiterated the point that we're making here, and that is that this is not over. This flood event is not over yet. We hope it is. We hope we're certainly headed the right direction, but we just can't let our guard down. I was talking to the IEMA director here. Well, I've talked to her many, many times over the last several weeks, but you know, they are aware of the situation. I've been out on some of these levees and talking to the farmers and the levee folks that are watching these levees. I mean, there's still a lot of concern out there. And on top of that, you know, I feel especially, you know, it's just an extremely difficult situation for those farmers that, number one, are trying to save their levees and have been working on those, while at the same time they should have been trying to get some crops in, if not down in the bottoms, but some up on the hill ground that they farm. So, you know, it's been extremely, you know, just a very, very challenging year. And that's just, you know, we've just talked about those farmers that are trying to protect levees and bottomland. I mean, set all that aside for a moment and look across the entire Midwest, but certainly here in Illinois, the challenges that we've had with just excessive water and the inability to get crops planted. I'm 60 years old. I talk to folks that are older than I, and some much older, and they've never really seen a weather situation like we've had this year as far as planting and trying to get crops in. So,
right.
Been tough all the way around.
Yeah, it wasn't necessarily just flooding, but the sheer amount of rain, which brings us to the insult to injury category. So you've got the rain, in some cases flooding, but just rain to the point where you can't get a corn crop in. And let's face it, it's too late to plant corn and get good results. While at the same time, you've got tariff issues on the federal level and a $19 billion federal assistance package, some of that for farmers as well. And that's going to be a task for you ahead of ensuring Southern Illinois farmers have access to the best advantages here on this $19 billion issue.
So, I mean, it's just kind of like putting salt in the wound, so to speak. I mean, the challenges, we've come off of several years of lower commodity prices and really no money to be made to speak of in farming. So we've got farmers out there that have been struggling along, trying to keep their head above water. And then you get a year like this that comes along, and so you have all the weather events that we're dealing with. And then, of course, the trade wars and the tariffs that we're facing right now has driven commodity prices even lower, and in some cases driven up costs. You know, the steel tariffs, obviously the price of farm equipment's going to be impacted by that. That's going to be transferred on to the farmers. And not that many people are buying new equipment right now, but that affects the used equipment prices as well, because one follows the other. So it's really been a compounding impact that some of these decisions, especially in Washington, have had, and how they're affecting farmers. And, you know, I got off the phone this morning in my drive-in. I live about an hour from Springfield here, but as I was driving in this morning, as I do most mornings, I try to get caught up on phone calls and talking to a farmer who, you know, farms down on the bottom, has some prevent acres that he's going to have to take not farm, not put any crops in this year. And he's got some challenges with federal crop insurance because of the fact that he couldn't get a crop in and the additional cost that he's going to be experiencing. Very complicated system, you know, problem that he's facing, but just one of many that we're seeing as we get into territory here where we really have never been.
Yeah, and I had that same conversation with a good friend of mine for many years last week, who simply put, he told me, I will make no money from my farm property this year. And what's interesting is about this $19 billion, you talk about the money aspect, and I can't help but think the fact that one of your very first jobs as an ag loan officer makes you in particular prepared for that point of view of being in the trench, you know, right there on the front line, and being able to take that experience to the point where the Department of Agriculture director and employing that frontline experience for our farmers.
Yeah, how ironic if you think about it. So I spent about between 5 and 6 years as a farm lender back in the early 80s, really difficult time. Obviously, I don't know if you recall, but back through the 70s, the farm economy was going great guns into the very early 80s, and then we got into the 81, 82, 83, up to about 85 or 6, some really, really difficult years, and that's when I was a loan officer. And there was, I kind of walked into a hotbed of problems because of, you know, things not being done properly prior to my arriving there. So it was quite an education for me. I think it was a good education. The experience that I got out of that was very important to many of the decisions I make now as talking about finances and looking at cash flows and balance sheets. I understand how important those are to an operation. You mentioned talking to somebody that said they weren't going to make any money this year. And I think in a best case scenario is that we as farmers can kind of hold our own, let alone make money. But I'm just worried about the guys and women out there that, you know, they're not gonna make money. They're gonna lose money, right? And if they're in a tough situation to begin with, you know, we can't afford to lose more farmers. That's the last thing that we need.
Yeah, especially the family farm, which I know you have an active. What do you farm anyway? You do soybeans, corn, wheat, What do you do?
Yep, corn, soybeans, wheat. Just a small operation. I only have about 300 acres, so pretty small. I do have a small cow herd, just a cow calf operation. So, kind of keeps me active. I don't have many hobbies except for this, and that's what I enjoy the most.
A farmer just messaged me this, and he says, "You know, here's something to consider. These tariffs have proven never to work. The world has been very comfortable with a 2-month oversupply or surplus, but there's going to be big supply disruptions with this weather. Other countries could come running for some kind of trade deal if these ag commodities are in short supply." Interesting thought.
Interesting thought, and it's such a complicated issue. But one thing that comes to mind that I keep harping back to, and I know many in the Ag Committee have talked about, you know, we in agriculture, not just in Illinois but across the country, have worked, especially on the corn, soybean, wheat side of it, and on the livestock side of it as well. You know, we've developed trading partnerships and relationships with foreign countries for many, many, you know, years and decades. We've developed those relationships, and now all of a sudden, you know, the rug's kind of being pulled out from under us, and those partnerships are being disrupted. And so, you know, how long first of all, is somebody else, some other country, going to step in and take some of our, you know, some of that trade away from us? And how are we going to be able to get that back? I mean, it's I'm afraid we've lost confidence and trust in some of our trading partners, and we're going to have to redevelop that, and that's going to take time. So it's not, hopefully this trade, these tariffs are going to be, this situation will be resolved soon, although that doesn't look like it's going to happen. But when it does happen, how long is it going to take us to redevelop that trust?
Yeah, get that section of the pie back that we have. You know,
exactly.
You look at the Department of Agriculture and you think farming. But there's a lot of other things that are going on in the Department of Agriculture. The fact that you, handle the state fairs, and seeing the money from capital projects, infrastructure heading to the state fairs, a good thing there. You work on school lunches. Maybe we get a chance to talk about that a little bit later. But there's some unknown ground that you are preparing to go in, and that is industrial hemp and recreational marijuana. And from the looks of this law, it looks as though you have a lot of responsibilities in this category.
Yeah, we absolutely do. It was kind of one of those first issues when I walked in the door in January, faced with some really daunting deadlines. The General Assembly last year passed the Industrial Hemp Act, and then, of course, the Farm Bill that was passed late in December of last year also included a provision in there for industrial hemp. And so I walked in the door. We needed to get going on getting all the applications and the rules drafted for the hemp program. That had all kind of been put on pause, I guess, for lack of a better word, because of the previous administration. But we knew there was a lot of interest out there, and we knew that there was farmers and even non-farmers that were interested in growing it. So I got my staff together. I said, we need to do everything that we can to make it available so that farmers could plant hemp this year. That was our goal. So
right.
To make that happen, we brought everybody together. We got the rules drafted. We got them passed, got them approved by the committee down at the Capitol. And on May the 1st, we had applications available online. And the first 24 hours, I mean, it was just absolutely amazing. Just hundreds of applications, thousands of acres almost immediately. And I'd like to give you a quick update, if I could, Tom,
sure,
on the numbers that we're seeing right now.
Because I think, John, in the first 24 hours, didn't you have 453, something like that, applications for one was grow, and then there was two categories, I could think.
That's exactly right. And I couldn't remember the numbers, but I'll go with your numbers there. But yes, there are two categories. One is a grower license. That's for the folks that obviously want to grow hemp. But the other one is for processor
right.
licenses. And as of, here a couple days ago, there had been approximately just shy of 800 grower applications that have been applied for and permits issued for most of those. We're still doing some paperwork on them. But what was probably most surprising to me is that we've had over 200 processor applications people applied for them. And so that's fantastic. In other words, we know we're good at growing crops. We know we have good fertile soils here. We know that, obviously decades ago, they used to grow hemp all over the state and all over the country. So we know we could grow it. I wasn't too concerned about that. But what I was most concerned about is after we produce it, what are we going to do with it? So to have 200 processor applications come in, that's fantastic. I think that's great news. Also, just so your listeners can know this, we've had just over 17,000 acres of land that has been set aside and approved for growing of hemp. And so we're just really, really, as a matter of fact, we're kind of a model around the country. A lot of states are doing now what we are doing, but we have really just been leaping ahead as far as what we've, these acres and the numbers that we've approved.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the industrial applications of this, plastics, fibers that we go down. And the other fact is that it's from a farmer's standpoint, I can grow more than one crop a year. You know, when the old saying is growing like a weed? Yep. And the high turnaround that you can have for this and have this product off, but you got to have some place to process it, granted. But the other problem you have is outside the hemp category is recreational marijuana. We've already got, of course, some structures in place for medicinal marijuana, but there's really a lot of uncharted territory here unless you want to do a follow-along. And I think in many cases when you're responsible for this, you say, well, I don't want to make their mistakes. Let's see what I can do to make this better. And you just mentioned your age, so you remember period of time where we're worried about marijuana being consumed in the United States because of paraquat. You have issues here because you have to monitor and test these herbicide ratios, whether there's anything dangerous because it's a smoked product and a product that's consumed, ingested. There's a lot of things to consider here.
Yep, absolutely. So your listeners may not know this, but the Illinois Department of Ag is responsible for the medicinal marijuana program that was passed several years ago. We license and oversee and regulate the growers of marijuana for the medicinal program, the processors that's also processed at the grower facilities, the transfer and the transportation. So we have that experience. And then when the General Assembly passed the Adult Use Recreational Use Marijuana Act just here a month or so ago or a few weeks back, they gave many a great deal of that responsibility also to the Department of Agriculture. So we're again going to be responsible for the licensing and the permitting of the growers, also the processors, also the transportation, as well as a craft grow new provision within the new recreational act. So I guess on one hand it's a tremendous responsibility, but I'm proud of the fact that the General Assembly understood that the department has done a good job of overseeing and regulating the medicinal program, and they in turn, because of that, they felt comfortable and given us a lot of responsibility with regard to this recreational program. So we've got a lot of work to do over the course of the next, before the end of this year is kind of our first deadline to have some applications ready, and then over the course of the next year, licensing and getting those facilities up and growing. So Going to be a busy summer, fall, and next several months for us.
But on the bright side, you get to make some improvements at the state fairgrounds, something that people have been wanting for a long time. I've seen a lot of numbers floated out at what it would take to get the two facilities caught back up, and they were, some pretty daunting figures.
You know, I'm going to back up just a minute and tell a quick story. When I was in my teens, I know I wasn't driving yet, but I came over to the state fair here in Springfield and helped a neighbor watch. He was showing some hogs, and I stayed there in the swine barn and slept on a cot and helped him take care of his hogs over the fair. You know, looking back to that, to where I am today, you know, as responsible for both the state fair here in Springfield as well as DuCoyne, it's just what a how far we've come and what a journey it's been and what an honor it is, honestly. But yeah, so the fairgrounds, both fairgrounds have a considerable age to them as far as the age of their buildings. You know, many built in the early 1900s. They take a lot of maintenance, a lot of repair, and quite frankly, the state hasn't had the money nor the resources to do some of that work. And I don't blame anybody for it. Certainly not my predecessors. They worked within the confines that they had dealt to them, but we do have some money available, and we're doing some upgrades, doing some paving, obviously, down at DuCoyne on the roads. We're working on the grandstand. We're working on the SI Center, and we've got a lot more work to do down there, but very excited. I feel like we've turned a corner.
You know, it's interesting. Before I got John on the air this morning, I was saying, you know, I was looking at your job, and I was thinking, you know, boy, I really like to get in there and do that job. That looks like a fascinating job. And then when I started looking at all the things that John Sullivan, who's the director right now of the Department of Agriculture, has on his plate that have to be addressed, I was like, no, thanks. I'll just get
know,
up at 4:30 in the morning.
We haven't talked about, and this is not really under the Department of Ag's act, I guess, or responsibilities, but I've been spending a great deal of time because I think it's an issue for rural America, certainly for the ag areas of the state, and that's the need for increased broadband and internet high-speed service out in many of the rural parts of the state.
Right.
And that was something that Governor Pritzker asked if I would take a lead on, and I said yes. I said I'm not an expert on it, and we'll learn and brought as many people together as I could, and we were successful in the capital bill that was passed getting $400 million set aside to for broadband to serve to provide a broadband in both unserved as well as underserved areas around the state. And I think it's a critical infrastructure need to whether you're operating a farm out of your home or a business in a community. If you don't have access to high speed internet, it's really handcuffing what you can do. So we're excited to have that. I actually have on a conference call today. We're working on trying to get that program set up the way we need, and you know, I think we can really make a difference.
Short time ago, I'm standing around a bonfire in Pope County, Illinois. A man who I've known for many years, who was hurt on the job, he says, "I need high-speed internet." He says, "I got to have." I said, "Why?" He says, "I've started exotic fish and breeding them right on my property. I need access so I can sell them and send them out, you know, as a product, so I can support myself." And you realize there's other people with other ideas that, you know, we just think broadband and think, "Oh, great, you can play games faster." No, there's business applications that each and every day somebody needs. John Sullivan, he's the director of the Department of Agriculture. John, appreciate you. I hope you'll come back and join us again sometime soon.
Tom, I would like to make this a regular event of trying to get the message out as far as what we do here at the Department of Ag and talk about some of the good things that we do. And if there's problems arise, you know, we need to talk about those as well. So would love to do that, Tom, in the future.